The story you are about to hear is true.
Attention! All true...
She's alive! Alive!
Welcome to the Retroist.
By the late 80s, my childhood friends and I had diverged. What they found entertaining and interesting did not align with what I found entertaining and interesting. We had, I guess as they say, grown apart. I think some of it in retrospect is that they were more mature than I was. They were ready to move on from being a kid, and I was holding on, maybe holding on for dear life. While we still hung out together from time to time, it was becoming more infrequent, and the things that we used to assume that we would do together, like play games, or see movies, or go to the arcade, were no longer things that I could take for granted. Instead, they were things that we would schedule, and that would often get canceled. And eventually I just started doing these things by myself. For some things, that didn't matter too much. I didn't mind going to the comic book shop by myself. But there were certain things that were just more fun with other people, like playing D&D, going to the arcade, or going to the movies. And by 1989, I was seeing most of the movies at the theater by myself. I remember going to see Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I was very excited to do so, and I did invite my friends to go with me. But as the movie approached, they all canceled, saying, "Oh, let's put it off, we'll go see it later." But I wanted to see it the week it opened. And so I remember getting up in the morning, walking over to the movie theater, and seeing this film by myself, and then walking home quite contentedly thinking about the film and how much fun it was. I didn't think at the time about how much I missed having discussions about the film with my friends. I was still too young to be so introspective. But as I've gotten older, I can see it very clearly. The things that I am more closely tied to with nostalgia are ones where I could relate to it through an experience, and often that experience is with another person, friends, family. So Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade sits at the end of the 1980s, which is pretty perfect to help define a childhood. And it is a movie that when I watch it, I enjoy, but because I also remember it being a very solitary movie compared to the other indie movies that I have seen, there's a certain wistfulness when I watch it. The original trilogy of Indiana Jones films span the entire decade of the 80s. And as it turns out, they align very well with the milestones in my life. From the first film I saw, Raiders, with my family, to seeing a movie without them, Temple of Doom, to finally being alone in the theater, as I was confronted with knowing what it was going to be like to grow up, and sometimes having to do things by yourself and figure out ways to enjoy them. These are difficult lessons to learn, and you don't learn them right away. You don't even know they're happening at the time. But I'm really glad that along the way, I had these great films to keep me company. On today's show, I'd like to talk to you about the final film in the original Indiana Jones trilogy, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. We'll talk about the people in front of and behind the camera, we'll talk about its development, production, its release, its music, and we'll throw in a few surprises here and there. We have an info-packed episode ahead of us, so without further ado, let's start the show. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is a 1989 action-adventure film directed by Steven Spielberg. It is from a story by George Lucas and Menno Meyas, and the screenplay was written by Jeffrey Boehm. To start off, I'd like to read from the back of the VHS of this film. This is a great-looking box, has the Temple of Doom poster on the front, and you got Harrison Ford and you got Sean Connery on the back, but let's read what they say. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. If you think keeping up with one Jones is exciting, try keeping up with two of them. Harrison Ford dons his rumpled fedora for the third time as Indiana Jones, and Sean Connery joins the thrill-a-minute fun as Indy's feisty dad. Filmmakers Steven Spielberg and George Lucas make sure this father-son duo never lack for adventure. The Joneses set out to find the mystically empowered Holy Grail and encounter so many spectacular pursuits and narrow escapes that Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is more than the culmination of Indy's exploits. It's the greatest adventure in film history. That's a quote from Jack Garner of Gannett News Service. Rated PG-13. It's a good-looking box. Last of the trilogy. They moved a lot of these at the video store I worked at. While that gives you a little bit of a plot, it doesn't really cover the full plot of the film, and I don't want to go too deep, but I'll give a little overview. The film starts off with a flashback to 1912, and you get to see Indiana Jones as a Boy Scout, played by River Phoenix, and he finds an artifact, Coronado's crucifix. He wants to get it to a museum, and he hops on this train, and there's this big origin story train ride, where we find out where he gets his bullwhip, we find out how he gets the scar on his chin, we find out how he got his fedora, all that stuff happens on this one train that he's racing on trying to get away from robbers who want the crucifix that he has. He actually escapes, makes it home, but his father, as we found out, is very disinterested in anything Indy is doing, letting us know where Indy's from and what his relationship is like with his father. We cut to 26 years later, and Indy has found the crucifix, and he's going to return it. When he returns home, we learn that his father, Henry, has disappeared while going to look for the Holy Grail. And the character Walter Donovan, who backs Indy's father's research, gives Jones the task of finding both his father and the Holy Grail. There's this great diary that Indy receives, beautiful prop in the film where we get all these notes that will be helpful. Characters from the original film are back, Brody and Sala. We also get to meet Indy's new love interest, Elsa Schneider, played by Allison Duty. Turns out she might be the worst of all of Indy's love interests. So Indy needs to meet up with his friends, follow all the clues, solve the riddles, rescue his father, and find the Holy Grail. It is a rip-roaring good adventure. The story was by two people, George Lucas and Menno Meyas. George Walton Lucas was born in 1944, influential filmmaker, founded Industrial Light and Magic, THX, Lucasfilm, and LucasArts. Eventually he would sell Lucasfilm to the Walt Disney Company, and they've been running wild with his creations ever since. He is one of the most financially successful filmmakers in history, but not only that, he's been pretty well received, being nominated for 4 Academy Awards. He has either conceived or directed 10 of the 100 highest grossing movies at the North American box office. Menno Meyas is a Dutch screenwriter, director, producer. He is an Academy Award nominee, born in the Netherlands in 1954. He would move to the U.S. in the 70s to study at the San Francisco Art Institute. The first movie of his that was made into a film was his adaptation of Alice Walker's 1982 novel, The Color Purple, which was directed by Steven Spielberg. He also wrote the spec script, The Children's Crusade, which would become the 1987 Francis Ford Coppola film, Lionheart. He and Spielberg would work together again on Empire of the Sun, which he did some script doctoring work for, and then he would co-write the story for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in 1989. The story came from those two, but the screenplay was written by Jeffrey Boehm. Boehm was an American screenwriter and producer, was born in 1946, he passed away in 2000. He's best known for working on films like The Lost Boys, Lethal Weapon 2 and 3, The Dead Zone, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and Inner Space. I read some articles about Boehm, and I like this quote. He's a polite, soft-spoken family man without a trace of the frenzied energy of his films. Boehm is simply Boehm, a reclusive writer rather than a celebrity worried about his image. And what you see is what you get. A very talented guy, the films he's written have gone on to gross over $1 billion. Much like the other Indiana Jones films, this one was directed by Steven Spielberg. Spielberg is a producer, screenwriter, all-around talent. Master of the blockbuster really helped to cement that as a thing. He's won many awards, including 3 Academy Awards, 2 BAFTAs, and 4 Directors Guild of America Awards. 7 of his films are in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress, all as culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Spielberg not only has directed many great things, but he's produced some of the greatest films of the 80s, including Gremlins, Poltergeist, Back to the Future, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I've talked about childhoods of the 80s. Anyone who grew up in that era would not have had the same type of entertainment if it wasn't for Steven Spielberg. Are you a fan of the Retroist podcast? Do you like more retro stuff? Why not check out the Retroist Patreon? Go to patreon.com/retroist. Supporters of the show get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, access to the Retroist Discord, and more. Feel good about yourself and make a difference in the world. Support the Retroist. Spielberg and Lucas wanted to make Indiana Jones a trilogy. This was known since Lucas had told Spielberg about Raiders back in 1977. If you read articles at the time, they were signed to do 5 films. So it wasn't clear what they were going to do, especially after Temple of Doom, which had more mixed reviews than Raiders of the Lost Ark. But Spielberg decided that he would complete the trilogy, mostly to keep his promise to Lucas. But he wanted the 3rd film to invoke the spirit and tone of the original film. That meant that Gloria Katz and Willard Hike, who had written Temple of Doom, would not be brought back. And while coming up with the film, Spielberg said he wanted to make sure that the movie was a throwback, more like the original film. This was a big commitment for Spielberg. Because of this, he had to actually drop out of directing 2 films that he could have made. 2 films that were pretty big hits, Rain Man and Big. I would have loved to have seen a Spielberg version of Big, although I do love Penny Marshall's work on that film. Now, there are a lot of scripts written for the various Indiana Jones films, some not related at all to what we would see. As I mentioned in the Temple of Doom podcast, a haunted house Indiana Jones script idea was floated around, a story idea for Indiana Jones and the Monkey King, some stuff about the Fountain of Youth, and then Lucas had this idea that maybe they could do a film with the Holy Grail, which would be set in both Scotland and Africa. Spielberg dismissed it, didn't love the Grail idea, even when Lucas tried to pour on all the cool things that it could maybe do. Famous writer-director Chris Columbus was actually brought in to work on the film. He had written Gremlins, Young Sherlock Holmes, and The Goonies. And the main plot device was the Garden of Immortal Peaches, which were fruits that, when you ate them, cured you, made you immortal. When that didn't work out, Columbus did a 2nd draft. This one had the Monkey King in it. We only know this because these scripts were leaked onto the internet back in 97. And many people thought this might be an early draft of the 4th Indiana Jones film. But that wasn't true. Spielberg didn't like any of this, and then he suggested that maybe we could learn who Indiana Jones's father was. Lucas still liked the idea that the Holy Grail needed to be the focus of the film, but Spielberg and Lucas went back and forth, convinced them that the father-son relationship could be interesting, and it could serve as a metaphor. That's when they hired Menomaeus, who did the 1st script. That's why he would get some story by credit, because it would be reworked later on by Jeffrey Boehm. There's a lot of differences between what Menomaeus' draft looked like and the final film, but there's a lot of good ideas in it, including reuniting with characters from the old film, Nazi villains, all the stuff that make Indiana Jones great. Boehm, when he was brought on, would spend 2 weeks with Lucas reworking the story. They would come up with a treatment that is very similar to the final film. It included the prologue, the father-son relationship, and most of the story beats that you'd see in the final film. Tom Stoppard was brought in to do some script doctoring and a bit of a rewrite in May of 1988, so not very far from when production was going to shoot. And he would polish a lot of the dialogue. He also brought in a lot of the callbacks that we see in the prologue where Indy is a kid, the things that would define him as an adult.
This summer, you could attend the opening of something spectacular. Something that has a taste for action and suspense. On May 22nd, at select theaters, an exclusive screening of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade will be proudly presented by Pepsi. The spine-tingling adventure that is sure to quench your thirst for excitement and whet your appetite for action.
Look on specially marked packages of Pepsi and Diet Pepsi to see how you can get an official Indiana Jones hat or free poster.
Industrial Light and Magic, Lucas's company, would get busy right away, and they built lots of great models for this film. There's a Zeppelin in the film, biplanes that need to crash through a tunnel, so not only do they need to build the biplane at scale, but also a giant tunnel that was 210 feet long. It's amazing how, during the 80s, not only has the Indiana Jones story grown, but the talents of the people making it have. Spielberg has his own production company that's a powerhouse, but Lucas has all of these special effects companies. ILM can do amazing things at this point, and they had the budget to do so. The studios wanted an Indiana Jones film, so when they needed a tank to be in the film, and they couldn't get a museum to lend them one, they could build their own. There is a scene in the film with rats, and I thought this was an interesting detail about production. In 1988, Lucasfilm would order 1,000 disease-free gray rats to be used in the catacomb scenes in the film. It was the same company that had supplied the bugs and snakes for the previous films, and it took 5 months for 5,000 rats to be bred for the sequence. They would use 1,000 mechanical rats to stand in for the ones that would be set on fire, so no rats were injured during the making of the film. The film also had snakes in it. Several thousand of them would be used during the train scene. So lots of animals in the film. And you get to see a real lion. There are actually two lions in the film. I think mostly nowadays when there are lions or big cats in the film, they do things with CGI. But in this film, there are actual lions. The film's cast begins with Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones, or as we learn now, Henry Indiana Jones Jr. That's right, Indiana was the name of the dog, and it is his nickname. He is, in fact, named after his father, Henry Sr., and you could read into why he would prefer to go by a different name. Indiana Jones is a globe-trotting archaeologist and adventurer. We have gotten used to Indy over the last two films, but when he's with his father, he's a bit different, as we all are in front of our parents. Indy was played by Harrison Ford, born in 1942. He is, at this point, iconic for playing characters like Han Solo and Indiana Jones. He has won awards, and his films have grossed $9.3 billion worldwide. But he's not the only one to play Indiana Jones in this film. Young Indiana Jones was played by River Phoenix. It was Harrison Ford who recommended River Phoenix for the part. He said that when he saw Phoenix, that he looked the most like Harrison Ford looked like when he was at that age. River Jude Phoenix was born in 1970, passed away in 1993, way too early. For such a young life, he was nominated for all sorts of awards. He worked in films like Explorers and Stand By Me as a kid. Then as he got a little older, took on more serious roles, things like The Mosquito Coast, Running on Empty, and My Own Private Idaho. Harrison Ford is in The Mosquito Coast with River Phoenix, which is probably where he got to know him so well. He sadly died at age 23 from an overdose, and it was pretty big news at the time. Sean Connery played Henry Jones, Indiana Jones' father. He's a professor of medieval literature who is much more interested in looking for the Holy Grail than doing anything with his family, including spending any time with his son. Spielberg had wanted to make a James Bond film for a long time, and he was a big fan of Sean Connery and wanted to work with him. He wasn't the only one considered, though. They had a fallback. They were interested in Gregory Peck to play the role, which I think could have worked. Connery had avoided big franchise films since he had stopped doing the James Bond films, and he would turn down the role, saying, "I'm not that much older than Harrison Ford," but eventually he relented, and because he had some influence, he was able to change the role a bit into something more that he wanted, and they would incorporate a lot of improv and ideas from Connery into the final film. Connery was born in 1930, passed away in 2020, Scottish actor, and most famous for being the originator of the James Bond role. But he was in a lot of other films, like Marnie, Murder on the Orient Express, The Man Who Would Be King, Time Bandits, Highlander, The Name of the Rose, The Untouchables, The Hunt for Red October, and his final big movie role was Alan Quatermain in The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Denham Elliott returned as Marcus Brody, Indy's colleague, who we last saw in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Denham Mitchell Elliott was born in 1922. He passed away in 1992. English actor, who's best known to American audiences for the Indiana Jones films, although, as I mentioned in the Raiders of the Lost Ark podcast, he was also in Trading Places. But he's also in other movies like A Room with a View, A Bridge Too Far, and Noises Off. John Rhys-Davies would also return as Sala, a professional excavator who lives in Cairo. Also brought back because they were trying to get that Raiders of the Lost Ark energy back. Rhys-Davies is a Welsh actor born in 1944. He played Sala in Indiana Jones and Gimli in The Lord of the Rings. On TV, he was on the TV show Sliders. Alison Duty played Dr. Elsa Schneider, the Austrian art professor, who's also Indy's love interest, and secretly a Nazi. Born in 1966, the Duty is an Irish actor, got her big break in A View to a Kill, but I think the biggest movie she's been in is The Last Crusade, although she would go on to be in films like A Prayer for the Dying and Major League 2. Julian Glover played Walter Donovan, the businessman who sends Jones on his quest, and while he wanted the immortality that the Holy Grail promised, he was also secretly working with the Nazis. Nazis are the best villain for Indiana Jones, maybe the best villains ever. Julian Glover was born in 1935. Award-winning TV, stage, and film actor. You might not be aware of this, but he was also in The Empire Strikes Back, where he plays General Maximilian Veers. But he's also in two other big franchises. He's in For Your Eyes Only, the James Bond film, in 1981, and lent a voice in Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets in 2002. And on TV, he's in Doctor Who, Blake 7, Remington Steele, the UK TV series The Avengers, and a couple of years ago, he was Grandmeister Pycelle in HBO's Game of Thrones.
Don't just see Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Be Indiana Jones and take on six new adventures. Call 1-900-990-INDY on your touchtone phone to play the Indiana Jones telephone adventure game. Every caller can write in for a great Indy photo certificate. It's only $2.50 a call. Kids, check with your parents before calling.
You call this archaeology?
Take on the challenge and don't miss Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Rated PG-13. Starts Wednesday, May 24th at theaters everywhere.
Production began on May 16th, 1988. They would shoot in Spain until June 2nd of that year. Brunwald Castle was actually Bürsheim Castle in West Germany. They would move right to interior shooting at Elstree Studios in England on June 5th. They would then do shooting in Venice in August. That meant they sealed off the entire Grand Canal from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Venice and kept tourists away that entire time, which is a bold thing to do. They would do pickup shots afterwards, but after 63 days, principal photography ended. Afterwards, when Spielberg viewed a rough cut of the film, he thought it wasn't action-y enough. And so more second unit work was done in various areas across the United States. And then finally, on September 16th, 1988, after 123 days of filming, it was a wrap on Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Then they would start the editing, and they needed to add a very important element to the Indiana Jones films, the music. And the music for Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was provided by the great John Williams once again, with music performed by the Hollywood Studio Symphony Orchestra. They did release an album for the film that had just key moments from the film, not the entire soundtrack. That version is out of print, although you can find copies to buy, and people have posted it online. In 2008, Concord Music Group released a box set of soundtracks with the other Indiana Jones films, and it had some expanded content in it. There would also be a new version of Indiana Jones music called the Indiana Jones Trilogy, released by Silva in 2003, that has cues that you can't find on the other soundtracks as well. So if you want to listen to all of the Indiana Jones music, you might need to buy multiple albums and then piece it all together. Although other people have already done a lot of that work and you can find a lot of it online. The music was put together by John Williams. John Towner Williams was born in 1932. He is a legend in movies, created some of the greatest film scores in cinema history, perhaps the most important person in film music from the later part of the 20th century, maybe of all time. Started in television and then worked in film. Started collaborating with Spielberg in 1974 on the Sugarland Express, and then would compose music for all but five of his feature films. Movies they worked on together include Jaws, Star Wars, E.T., and Schindler's List, along with the Indiana Jones films and others. In 2022, Williams was given knighthood, honorary knight commander of the Order of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth II for services to film music. Another honor on top of many other awards and honors that he's had in his life. If you were going to the theater in November of 88, which I was, to go see things like The Naked Gun or Scrooged, that's when the teaser trailer for Last Crusade hit theaters. I was buzzing afterwards. Finally, we were getting another Indiana Jones film, and I couldn't wait. The film would get released in the US and Canada on Wednesday, May 24th of 1989, trying to make a big four-day weekend out of it, and it would be released in over 2,300 theaters. It would make $37 million over that four-day weekend, which was a record. Its three-day weekend figure was almost $30 million, and it sort of set the stage for bigger and bigger films, because it would be surpassed later that year by Batman and Ghostbusters 2. The film would hold the record for highest Memorial Day gross until 1994, when it was beaten by The Flintstones, of course. The film would go on to gross $197.1 million in the U.S. and $277 million internationally. That meant, in total, it made $474.1 million, making it, at the time, the 11th highest grossing film of its time. Now, despite Batman being released that year, The Last Crusade was the highest grossing film worldwide of that year. But in North America, Batman was the top film. The film would be re-released in 1992, and when it was, it made $139,000. So not a huge re-release. The film is generally pretty well received by modern aggregators. People love the light tone of the film. Also, for many people, because of the break between Last Crusade and Temple of Doom, this was the first Indiana Jones movie that they got to see in the theater. And for a lot of people, the father-son stuff very much resonated, and they loved the chemistry between the two. The film would get nominated for many awards, 3 Academy Awards, 1 for original score, 1 for best sound, and 1 for best sound editing. It would win for best sound editing, and that would be the only award it would win from the major awards, like the BAFTA, Golden Globes, and Saturn Awards. So I printed out my local paper at the time to see what movies were playing in my neck of the woods. We had the 6-plex and the 8-plex in my town, and here's what was playing. At the 8-plex, you had Scandal, How I Got Into College, K-9, Miracle Mile, Criminal Law, Pet Sematary, Field of Dreams, and Earth Girls Are Easy. Then at the 6-plex, you have Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Major League, Roadhouse, See No Evil, Field of Dreams, and Rain Man, which could have been directed by Steven Spielberg. So a really good lineup at the 6-plex. It's definitely the theater I remember seeing the film at because I had a great Burger King near the 6-plex. And I would either eat at the Burger King after or before the movie started. As for movie ads, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade is by far the largest ad for the movies that had come out that week. They actually don't have a lot of ads here. You have How I Got Into College, which is tiny. See No Evil, Hear No Evil. Roadhouse. You don't even know what Roadhouse is about. It's just the words Roadhouse with a circle behind it. Not a lot. Now, I wouldn't be opening the paper if I wasn't looking to see what my local movie critic, Lou Luminick, was saying about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I've talked about Lou and his reaction to Raiders, and then him having to defend his review of Raiders when Temple of Doom came out. It's been long enough that it doesn't seem like he needs to bring up Raiders of the Lost Ark again. So he says of the film, it's a fairly typical episode from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, the second and its producers promise final sequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark. I, for one, am shedding no tears, but this series has millions of fans who will probably feel differently. He says the film is less gruesome than the more interesting Temple of Doom. He then mentions Spielberg's amazing technical expertise and even mentions what I said earlier about Spielberg only doing the film out of loyalty to Lucas. And he ends with this. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, a calculated crowd pleaser, opens with what amounts to a 20-minute featurette showing a teenaged Indiana, River Phoenix, taking on pilferers in 1912 Utah, an episode that reveals how Indiana got his fedora, his bullwhip, and his fear of snakes, but not his nickname. For that, you need to sit through the entire 127-minute movie, something that fans of the series probably won't mind at all. What I don't like at this point, as we get into the late 80s, is now Lou has to put stars. I don't like that. I always liked that he didn't have to put stars. I imagine he was forced to do that because it had kind of become a standard. He gave Last Crusade 2.5 stars. What else is in the paper here? Jim Henson's Muppet Babies in Where's Animal will be at the Meadowlands Arena, which is one of our local arena stadiums. Star Mites, the space age Peter Pan, is playing at the Criterion Center stage right. Here's a coupon you won't see much anymore for cigarettes. And it's a weird one because it's kind of tied in with dog food, but it's Kent cigarettes, and that's why it caught my eye. I'm not sure what's going on here. $3 off a carton. A large portion of my family smoked Kent cigarettes. I imagine they would have cut this out, sent me to the store to buy them. Roy Rogers has mini soccer balls as a giveaway. I'm sure everyone was rushing to Roy's to get that mini soccer ball in 1980s New Jersey. Finally, I wanted to take a look at what was on TV that night. On CBS that night at 8 o'clock, you could return from Last Crusade and watch Jake and the Fat Man from 8 to 9, and then the season finale of Wise Guy from 9 to 11. NBC has Bob Hope's Birthday from 8 to 10, followed by Unsolved Mysteries. Channel 5, which is a local station that would become Fox, is showing a movie, The African Queen, from 8 to 10, followed by the news. Then ABC at 8 was showing Growing Pains, 8:30, Head of the Class, and then from 9 to 11, the 50th Barbara Walters special. I probably would have been watching Growing Pains or Head of the Class, although on WPIX, another local station, they're showing Outland, Sean Connery film. So I could have been very pumped up on Sean Connery, would have come home and said, oh, Outland's on, let me watch that. Although there's reruns of The A-Team on WOR, which is another local station. While I did like Jake and the Fat Man, I probably would have watched Growing Pains, Head of the Class, and then would have jumped over to The A-Team. Of course, if I had recognized that Outland was on, I probably would have watched that. The cable channels are actually listed. It's the late 80s, so they're starting to show up in the paper. Nothing really jumps out at me, although at 9 o'clock, Police Academy 5 is on HBO. The Right Stuff is on Cinemax, followed by Body Heat. Showtime was showing Convoy earlier in the day from 1978, which I loved. And Super Dave is on at 9:30. I might have watched that if I had Showtime that week. I would only see Showtime when we had a preview special for it. We never subscribed to Showtime. Outrageous Fortune with Shelley Long and Bette Midler is on after Super Dave, which I also would have watched. I thought that was a fun movie. So not a bad night of television. I would have been so high on Last Crusade, I probably wouldn't have noticed anyway.
While you're up, would you get me a soft drink?
You must choose. Choose wisely.
Discover the great taste of Diet Coke.
You have chosen wisely.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, now available on videocassette. Catch the adventure with a Diet Coke.
The film would get released on VHS much more rapidly than other Indiana Jones films. The VHS market was very mature as we got into the late 80s, and they learned how to market and sell these things to strike when the iron was hot. It would also get released on DVD as part of a trilogy box set in 2003. That was exciting because it had a documentary and special features. It was very successful, selling 600,000 copies on the first day of release. It would then get a Blu-ray release at first in 2012, and then a 4K remaster in 2021, which used the original negatives. I'll talk a little bit more about Indiana Jones in other medium in a future podcast, but there was a Last Crusade novelization by Rob McGregor. It did really well, enough to be included on the New York Times bestseller list, and McGregor would go on to write the first six Indiana Jones prequel novels in the 90s, most likely based on this success. I've read these novels. I have to say, he really does keep things moving quickly. There would be no toys to promote The Last Crusade, but they would start selling clothing like shirts, fedoras, watches, jackets, baseball caps, and there would be video games based on The Last Crusade, but we'll talk about those in another episode. The Last Crusade would not be the final film for Indiana Jones. There would be two more Indiana Jones films that would follow, but that wasn't clear at the time. It appeared that this would be the last of the Indiana Jones films, and maybe the most important thing that came out of it was the sequence at the beginning, where we got to see a young Indiana Jones, because it would inspire George Lucas to create a television series, The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, which had Sean Patrick Flannery and Corey Carrier playing the young Indiana Jones at different ages in his life. They had considered making a film series with River Phoenix, but unfortunately that didn't happen because of his untimely passing. So for years, the only thing that would make it onto the screen that featured Indiana Jones was the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles, and that was directly inspired by what we saw in The Last Crusade at the beginning. The Last Crusade is a lot of people's favorite Indiana Jones film, and I could see why. It has a lot of the optimism of the first film and the advanced technical know-how of Steven Spielberg at the height of his power. It adds to it a comedic family element that was missing from both earlier films. And what's wonderful about that is that it makes it stand alone. Each of the original Indiana Jones trilogy films feels very different when you watch it. And for fans of Indy, you can choose which is your favorite, or you could do like me and sit back, relax, and enjoy all three. Thanks for listening to the show. For more retro fun, you can drop by the website at retroist.com. You can follow me on social media. I'm at all the major social media sites at Retroist. The music you hear on the show is by Peachy. If you like what you hear, you can follow Peachy on Twitter and Twitch. He's at PeachyPixel8. That's the word Peachy, the word pixel, and the number 8. If you'd like to follow Lou Luminick, my childhood reviewer, he is still very active. You can find him on Twitter at Lou Luminick, where he goes by the name Trapped by Television. He posts there on a regular basis. and is a lot of fun to follow. If you'd like to support The Retroist, you could do so by giving it a 5-star review wherever you download the show. It really is those 5-star reviews that help people find the show, so if you could do that, I really would appreciate it. If you'd like to support the show further, The Retroist is on Patreon. Supporters of the show, for just a couple of bucks a month, get bonus episodes, bonus tracks, bonus scans, and access to the Retroist Discord, the greatest retro community on the internet. This is part 3 in a multi-part series on the Indiana Jones franchise. I hope you're enjoying it, and you stay tuned for more things to come. It's been a while, but I wanted to thank a couple of people who've supported the show. I'm sure I'm repeating some names or missing some. Some supporters that have joined include Dominic Abram, Nicholas Gale, Center Reinhardt, Gregory Hunt, Jason Smith, Michael, Sean Reed, Brian Miles, Randy Shively, Rob Snyder, Mark Coggle, and of course, my buddy Vic Sage. I hope to see everyone over on Discord or on Patreon, where it's great to be able to interact with people. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great weekend. Laughter's in session when the man with the hat is back, and this time he's bringing his dad, Indiana Jones, in Keeping Up with the Joneses.
This has been a Retroist production. Goodbye.